This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Luis Girard, director of an award-winning short film that will premiere very soon, titled Wake. That film features a child who is deaf. But first, disability news for the week of April 4th, 2022. The U.S. Department of Transportation is proposing a rule requiring that all new single-aisle airplanes with 125 or more seats have at least one accessible restroom, which would need to be big enough to allow a passenger with a disability to approach, enter, and maneuver, use all of the facilities with the help of an assistant if needed, and to be able to leave using the onboard wheelchair. Currently, accessible restrooms are only mandated on planes with more than one aisle, but officials say that the overwhelming majority of domestic flights, including those going across the country, are flown on single-aisle aircraft. That means that many people with disabilities avoid flying or resort to dehydrating themselves or using adult diapers or catheters. According to U.S. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, quote, "Far too often travelers with disabilities don't have the opportunity to fly to their destinations because they can't access the lavatories on most airplanes. This rule would make airplane lavatories more accessible for passengers with disabilities and bring us one step closer to the day when air travel is possible for everyone," end quote. The requirements would apply to airplanes that are ordered 18 years after the rule takes effect or delivered 20 years after the effective date. The timeline results from a 2016 agreement between disability organizations, the Association of Flight Attendants, Airbus, and airlines. However, the Transportation Department is seeking comments on whether a more accelerated timeline is possible, and the agency said it may alter the timetable in the final rule. In 2020, the Transportation Department issued another proposed rule calling for accessibility improvements that did not require a larger size lavatory. However, they received so many comments in favor of expanding the size of onboard restrooms that they elected to address both rules collectively. The Transportation Department said the new proposal is one of its highest priority regulatory initiatives because it would promote access and decrease discrimination. The proposed rule will be up for public comment until May 27th. Coda, a film featuring mostly actors with disabilities, won the Academy Award for Best Picture on Sunday at the Academy Awards, on the show, marking the first win for a film starring a mostly deaf cast. Coda also won the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay, and Troy Kotsur became the first deaf male to receive an Academy Award. While accepting the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, Kotsur said in sign language, quote, "I cannot believe I'm here. This is dedicated to the deaf community, the CODA community, and the disabled community. This is our moment," end quote. Kotsur's CODA co-star, Marley Matlin, was the first deaf performer to win an Academy Award back in 1987. In CODA, which stands for Child of Deaf Adults, 17-year-old Ruby is the only hearing member of her family who often serves as an interpreter for her parents. When she joins her high school choir and discovers her talent for singing, she becomes divided between her family obligations and pursuing her dreams. Jay Ruderman, president of the Ruderman Family Foundation, who advocates for inclusion and authentic representation of people with disabilities, said the awards for CODA are a milestone. Ruderman said, given the long-term objective of Hollywood fully embracing disability as part of the definition of diversity, the honor for CODA at the 94th Annual Academy Awards provides yet another occasion to celebrate, but also to look forward to a more inclusive future in which people with disabilities have access to far more opportunities in entertainment. End quote. Just 2 weeks after signing a government spending bill containing more money for special education, President Joe Biden is seeking another large increase for kids with disabilities in pre-K through 12th grade. That's $3.3 billion more than in 2021 and the largest ever two-year increase in Individuals with Disabilities Education Act grants to states, according to the White House. Also, the plan would double the government's investment in early intervention services for infants and toddlers with disabilities provided under IDEA to $932 million. Biden also wants to more than double the funding for IDEA personnel preparation grants to $250 million to support a pipeline of special educators to address shortages of those teachers in a majority of states. Denise Stile Marshall is the CEO of the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates, a nonprofit that advocates for the rights of students with disabilities and their families. Marshall noted that the president's plan, which covers school-age children, would support a glide path, quote, to full funding in 10 years. The challenge is getting Congress to follow through and support states and schools at these critical levels so that students with disabilities can receive the education they deserve and need, end quote. In addition to special education, the budget request includes money for everything, improving services at the Social Security Administration, to affordable housing for people with disabilities, and funding to make national parks more accessible. And finally, there's a new Muppet character on the children's program Sesame Street who uses a wheelchair. Amira portrays a child with a spinal cord injury who relies on forearm crutches or a bright purple wheelchair to get around. Amira makes her debut this week on the Arabic version of Sesame Street that airs in the Middle East and North Africa. She will also appear in Sesame Workshop's animated short videos, which help kids learn about math, science, health, safety, child protection, and social-emotional issues. Sesame Workshop said that in addition to highlighting children with disabilities globally, Amira will appear in videos offering playful learning and support to kids affected by conflict, crisis, and displacement. Scott Cameron, head of international productions at Sesame Workshop, said that Amira was developed over the course of 2 years with input from inclusion advisors to ensure that her, quote, identity, movements, and equipment were representational, end quote. Sesame Workshop is also releasing some new autism resources in April, a month that promotes awareness of autism. And that's the news for this week.
Leave all God please to take ourselves away. We've got the telephone to say what we can't say. Leave all God higher and higher every day. God please take this boy away.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander. This is Disability Beat, and I'm joined today by Louise Girard, who is the award-winning director of a short film called Wake that is that features a child who is deaf. So welcome to the program, Louise.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. Well, why don't we start out by having you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. I am Luis Girard. I am from Puerto Rico, a filmmaker that lives in New York City at the moment. I've been working in film and advertising for almost 20 years now.
So you must be finding a little bit of success there. So how did you get involved in the film Wake? What's the history behind that?
Okay. Well, it's a bit long, but I'll try to keep it short. I wrote The Wake in 2017. So it's funny, looking back, now there are movies like Coda and Sound of Metal that have been very successful with deaf characters, right? But yeah, I wrote The Wake back in 2017, and shot it in 2019. And the reason I wrote it back in 2017, just as I wrote a few different screenplays, I wasn't sure I was going to produce the film, just like what normally happens with many screenplays. You never know if they'll ever get produced or not. And back in 2019, an opportunity came. I met a friend, eventually became a friend, Chris Maiden in Canada. And we were talking about producing this type of content. And he asked me if I had something that could be produced in Canada. And I told him about The Wake, and he asked me to read it, and I sent it to him, and he got excited immediately and said he wanted to be a part of it, and he would help me produce it, which he did, and that's how it came about. It took a while. From the time it was written to the time it was produced, and now being released, because COVID just made the process a bit difficult, to finish the film, so the post-production took forever.
Yeah, and COVID made life difficult for a lot of art people in the world of art and production, music, and all those things. So thank goodness you finally got back to it. Can you summarize a little bit of the story behind this? I think this is fiction, correct?
It is fiction. But like many fiction stories, there's also a little bit of myself in it, but the story is 100% fiction. It's the main theme is brotherhood. It's the story of these two brothers that live in a small town in the U.S. And their family runs the local funeral home. And Walter, who is the oldest of the two, he's 15 years old, basically robs the homes of the people that pass away. And in his mind, he's not like a real criminal. He's just, I guess you could say he's a bit of a sociopath, perhaps, but he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong because the people have passed and they don't need these things anymore. And he also thinks of his father as someone who profits from the dead. So basically what he does is that when someone passes away in the town and the wake is taking place at their parents' funeral home, he takes his brother to the person's home and they break into the house and they just they steal items. It's more of an adventure for them. Mm-hmm. And then obviously that leads to, I don't want to spoil it away, but yeah, it to a negative ending, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And so the younger brother, is that the young man who's deaf?
Correct. He, his name is Sander. Colbeck Bola. And yeah, he was 10 years old when we shot the film. He had no acting experience. Actually, none of the brothers had any acting experience, and I'm quite proud of that because they did a great job, both of them. Sander, because he had never been in camera, and he was extremely shy. Isaac, who plays the older brother, he was not like an actor, and he had to learn sign language. It was a long process to find them. It was a process because I had the option of going with a kid who was not deaf and have him pretend like he was.
Mm-hmm.
But I chose the tough path of like finding someone who was really deaf. I wanted that authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took me months. I spent about 4 months in Canada trying to find this boy. So I did multiple casting sessions because it was not just about finding this boy, Sander, but it was also they had to look like brothers. It was a bit of a puzzle. Mm-hmm. It was a long journey, but eventually I got there.
Yeah. So this film has not been released yet, but there has been a little bit of history already. It has won an award. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. It just won a jury award at the Thomas Edison Film Festival, which it started in late February, but it's a film festival that runs for about a year, and they basically screen the movies in different cities around the U.S. until next January. So my film, even though it already won an award because they announced the winners before the first group of films were screened, my film hasn't been screened yet. So now on Thursday, April 7th, it will be its first screening. It'll be like the opening night, which will be at the Cleveland International Film Festival, which is an Oscar qualifying film festival.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'll be traveling there tomorrow and get my hands in the process of Q&A after the film and all that. I wish I could bring the cast with me.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, but that would be a little bit more of an expense than probably a filmmaker can do on his own. So are all the films in this film festival, do they all come from the Thomas Edison?
No. There are different film festivals, and mm-hmm. basically, so The Wake was just released now, and there are independent film festivals. So right now, the film The Wake is just starting its festival run.
Okay.
So it'll be screening in different film festivals for a year, perhaps a year and a half, both in Europe, the U.S., Asia, Middle East. So
it's going to be traveling all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be traveling all around. Yeah.
For a year. What happens to it after that? Are people going to be able to see this somewhere online, or do they have to?
No, there'll be a distribution, and it'll eventually get it'll get some distribution. I've been offered distribution, but I'm just holding on that for a little bit, because the problem is if the movie's released, then it gets immediately disqualified from film festivals. It's one of those tricky things. So I have to do if the movie's online, then a film festival, especially the good ones, would not accept it.
Mm.
So I'm basically going to do the festival run, and once it's being screened in good film festivals, then it'll be released and hopefully available for the world to see.
Yeah, that would be great. So are there any festivals scheduled for any place in Illinois or in the Midwest?
So the Chicago International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
But that one they haven't, it's not confirmed yet. And I can't remember, I think that one is in October. I have to double check. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, that's in the lineup.
Yeah, so that's only a couple of hours away for most people most people in central Illinois anyway. So I suppose ultimately they can just look at their website to see if The Wake is a part of that before they, make the trek up there. Is this the only film in the festival that you are aware of that includes a person with a disability, or are there others?
I believe so. I believe this might be the only one.
Mm-hmm.
I looked over the short films that were selected, and I didn't see any other. So yeah, hopefully that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Or not a good thing. I mean, but it just makes it different. But these film festivals are not, like this particular film festival is not the type that is focused on a particular like subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, if a film gets accepted because they like it, then yeah. There are other film festivals that are focused on like fantasy or like horror,
right.
Films that are more like focused on documentary. But this one in particular, it's not.
I'm assuming that since your actor, the 10-year-old who is deaf, his parents were involved in this, you know, supporting him to do this as well. What information or assistance did you get from them in helping to guide your young actor and get the, you know, make him a participant in the film?
It's a good question. And I have to say, I was quite fascinated by his family, because his family was, they're all deaf and mute. And it's a large family. Well, that's incorrect. The father, he actually is deaf from one ear, but he speaks, and yeah, he's just deaf from one ear, but can hear from the other.
Mm-hmm.
His mom, Sarah, she's also deaf and mute. He has three brothers and two sisters, and they're all deaf and mute. So it was obviously communicating was very interesting. And this was one of the things I wanted, as I said earlier, I wanted to be authentic, and I wanted someone that was real, had the disability, but I did not foresee what that entailed. And obviously one of the things I had to have like, interpreters on set.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to, and then I not only one, I had three, because then they would get like tired after a while. So every couple of minutes they would keep switching. So whenever I want to tell Sandra something, I would tell her, she would tell him, then she would come back at me, you know, and then a couple of minutes they would swap. So that's kind of like the way we did it. And when, if I wanted to go and meet with him, and that was probably one of the most enlightening experiences for me after I casted him, I just wanted to be sure that he understood what the project entailed, because it was physically demanding. We were shooting in the cold in winter, and we were shooting for multiple days. And so I went to his house and met with his family, and I just wanted to be 100% sure that he wanted to be involved in the film, because he had never acted. And when I was there, I saw the way they communicated, and these are things that I did not have in the script. And after being in the house, I adapted this I included them in the script. Like if the sister was in the kitchen and wanted to call the mom, she would turn the lights on and off. She would switch the lights on and off,
mm-hmm.
And that's when how the mom would look and react and know that she was calling. Or like they would stomp on the floor, and that's what. Like one would stumble on the floor and get the brother's attention. And I saw those things, and yeah, they were quite enlightening, because I included them in the film. And so it was for me a big learning experience as well. And I got to understand them, and I'm very happy that I decided to go the way I went and got the opportunity to show like this type of disability that normally you don't see in film. Again, funny enough, now you see Coda and Sound of Metal, but back when I wrote it, those films were not. I remember Children of the Lesser God.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that movie from the 80s, which you mentioned, the actors. That was like one of the times films that I remember seeing a character with this type of disability.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that would be, I'm happy that that I was able to finish the film and made the decisions I made, even though they were challenging at times.
I credit you for making that decision, because I can imagine it would be a struggle for some people thinking, well, I don't use sign language, so how am I going to communicate with people that way? But you made it work.
I made it work. I must say, sometimes being naive at something is great, because you go all in without knowing the possible hurdles. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's a good thing, you know. And I went into it with the right energy, and I was not thinking of like problems. And then, of course, I ran into, I wouldn't say problems, just hurdles. But we got through them. And looking back, his mom is so happy and so proud, and she was always like writing and she asking, when's the film ready? I want Sandra to see. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy. There was a review that came out on Friday about the film. It was like a, I can't remember the paper. It was a really good, it was a 5-star review, and,
wow,
and had very nice things to say about his performance.
Uh-huh.
The film critic like loved his performance and said he was like a talent to like watch, because he could, if he wanted, there was a career, a film, an acting or a path in film for him.
Yeah,
and I was quite happy to see that. I was quite proud. I sent the article to his family, so I'm sure that they must be quite excited.
Yeah, well, you'll have to send it to me too. I'd love to read it. So we're running out of time here, but I did want to ask you a little bit about the wake and its portrayal of a child who was deaf. You know, how did that get reviewed by, first of all, the family, but other people in the deaf community who have viewed it?
Well, to be honest, because the film is just being released, so only very few people have seen it, and people from the deaf community who have seen it, obviously Sandra's family, and there's one boy who I forgot to mention earlier. His name is Brendan. Brendan, last name is tricky to pronounce. Mm. Nugget, and he's an actor, and he's deaf and mute. And I had him with me when I was shooting the film. He was not an interpreter. He was just sitting next to me on set, because I just wanted to make sure that if someone who was deaf and watched the film, I wanted to make sure that the signing was correct. And so he was basically telling me, because the rest of the cast had learned sign language. So Brendan was there just to let me know, you know, that they were incorrect. He basically was the one who taught them the sign language, and then he was next to me letting me know if a take was good or a take was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the first person I sent the film to when I had a rough cut.
Yeah,
and he said it's the signing is perfect for him. It's like these are real people that have been speaking ASL or sign language for their entire life.
Yeah,
so that was another thing that gave me great peace of mind.
Absolutely, I'm sure it did. So do you have a website for the film? Is there anywhere people can go to find out more about it? I know you don't have it online yet, but is there a trailer that they can view? And if so, where might they find that?
Yes, there is. Well, I have a trailer. There's a trailer on Vimeo, but there's a trailer on my website. My website is www.luisgerard.com, and you'll see it there immediately. And also, if you go to the Cleveland International Film Festival, if you go through the short films on competition, you'll find The Wake. You just need to put the title The Wake under their search platform, and you'll see it. There's a trailer there as well.
Okay, well, I'm afraid
so it's either on my website or that.
I'm afraid we are out of time. So thank you so much for joining me today, and we'll look forward to seeing The Wake soon. Thank you, Luis Gerard, who is the director of The Wake.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'll stay.